It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Mary Jo Foley's here. A little trip back into time. Talking about that magic time at Microsoft when they suddenly discovered the internet. What really happened? Also, the latest from IFA, Windows 10 updates, and we'll explain what that weird CPU spike is in the newest Windows release. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 637. Recorded Wednesday, September 4th, 2019. A portion of insiders. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Melissa. Bad data happens to good companies. That's why 10,000 businesses count on Melissa for clean, reliable address data. Get started today with 25,000 records cleaned for free at melissa.com/twit. And by Worldwide Technology. Worldwide Technology's Advanced Technology Center is like no other testing and research lab anywhere, with more than $500 million of equipment, including OEMs like NetApp. And it's virtual, so you can access it 24/7. To learn more and get insights into all it offers, go to wwt.com/twit. It's time for Windows Weekly. Here we go again, kids. The latest news from Redmond with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Mary Jo's at ZDNet, allaboutmicrosoft.com. Paul Thurrott is the man about town at Thurrott.com. And, of course, his books are at leanpub.com. You're both home. You're in your natural habitats.
Yep. We're getting pretty comfortable, too.
Uh-oh, don't get too comfortable. I'm sure Microsoft will get you on the road again soon.
Yep.
Paul, still no haircut, and that's good. We like it.
Rocking the Christopher Walken look today.
I like it.
Next up, ponytail.
Basically,
yeah. It's just like man whatever bun, bedhead happens to look
He's
like.
He's heading to man bundom.
Yeah, I think he wants to look like the Linux guys, and so he's going to have a gray ponytail pretty soon.
This is it. Neck beard and all. Mm-hmm. Nice. So Paul is continuing his saga, which I really enjoy on his website, of the history of Winders. And I take it that this lead story comes from that, unless I'm mistaken.
Yeah, actually. So the reason it's in here, though, is because I had this idea in the back of my head that Mary Jo had some firsthand knowledge from this time period, and she does.
1997. So what a year that was. Yeah.
No, I think that's going to kind of, in some ways, it's the more interesting bit. But the way this came about was, you know, I do all this research for the article series. One of the things I did this past week was I watched all of the keynote videos from the PDCs between 1993 or 2 and 2001.
Honey, I can't come to dinner. I'm watching 1998 right now.
I cannot stress enough how interesting I am.
Jim Alchin is talking. It's exciting.
Yep. By the way, that conversation could have occurred in my house. actually, it's funny you say that because literally one time Jim Alchin was talking, she came in and said something to me and I had to pause it.
What?
And then
what?
when she left, I jokingly said, sorry about that, Jim. that's true. That's a true story.
But
one of the things, it's really interesting because one of the things that really struck me was in 1996, right? Yeah, March 1996, they had what's now called the Internet PDC. And this was, you know, remember just a few months into their we're going to embrace the Internet stuff. And
When was the famous Bill Gates memo where they said
Internet title memo? Yeah,
he suddenly got the internet. That was 95?
May 95 was the internet title wave. December 95 was the internet strategy workshop where they announced their plans to the world.
So just so people know that before this, Microsoft poo-pooed the internet. They didn't think it was
multiple
going
people. Yeah, some people at Microsoft understood it, and they kept trying to warn Gates. But Gates was involved. Well, first of all, Microsoft was releasing Windows 95. This was delayed. It was a big deal. But Gates was concerned about the future, and the future that Gates saw was interactive TV. It was these other markets, you know.
MSN.
And people
MSN.
Kept saying the internet. Yeah, he was worried about AOL and CompuServe and those guys. Anyway, they did this massive.
It's kind of hard to imagine now. You know, somebody in 95 looking at, or 94 looking at the internet going, yeah, I don't see it.
Well, so there's a lot. Okay, I mean, we could go on hours and hours about this topic, but it's really interesting that the fear that Gates and Microsoft eventually had about the internet had to do with what became known as middleware. It was this stuff that could run on top of your platform and become a platform, and that instead of customers and developers going to your platform, they would go to the middleware platform. And so Java was an obvious example of that. Netscape with the web browser was an example of that.
The thing that makes the operating system unimportant.
Right.
In fact,
That's
what happened. They were right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They were right. And the thing that's fascinating about this is just how thoroughly they integrated the internet into everything that they did.
Once they got religion, it's astonishing. Yeah.
Over the next 2 years, the sheer amount of stuff that they did internet related is just amazing. And part of it's in my series, it's elsewhere, you know, books and whatnot. But we watching, I guess. I mean, obviously, I've seen most of these things before. But watching those PDC videos, it was the 1996 one, the internet one, where they're talking about – Bill Gates is talking about how they're going to replace everything in Windows with HTML.
Wow.
And they said there's this core component of Windows called user. And user is responsible for the dialog boxes, the windows, the forms, the everything. That's going away. It's all going to be HTML. Everything's going to be HTML. And I'm listening to this and I'm like – that never happened. You know, I was like, I don't remember this, you know, I thought that was kind of interesting. And so I just coincidentally, or maybe not totally coincidentally, but I reread the book, Breaking Windows by David Bank, who's a Wall Street Journal reporter. And it's about this time period. And he describes something that became public knowledge because of the Microsoft antitrust trial, if I'm not mistaken, which was an internal debate between two of the, I don't know what their titles were exactly, like today would be corporate vice presidents, Jim Alchin, who was in charge of all of Windows by this point, NT and 95, and Brad Silverberg, who ran their internet platform and tools division, previously ran Windows 95. Silverberg wanted Microsoft to do what they were doing. What Gates was describing in early 1996 was exactly the strategy that Silverberg wanted, embrace and extend the internet. And what Alchin was doing was over the sideline screaming, what are you doing? We have a platform. It's called Windows. You're like, Windows is the platform, not this stupid internet thing. And anyway, between the two, if you don't know anything about Microsoft history, the Alchin Silverberg thing is fairly well known because, again, it was in the trial. And a lot of the memos from Alchin in particular came out during the trial. But the story that the reason I published this today is that after literally 2 years of this, finally Alchin got through to Gates, and Gates put the brakes on and said, we're not doing this anymore.
Wow.
And all of this stuff that we sort of think about with Microsoft and how terrible they were during the internet era kind of started right there. Let's take Java and contort it so it works differently on Windows, and we'll ruin that platform. Let's, you know, and they stepped back a lot of all the HTML stuff that was going to be Windows, gone. Windows 98 did ship with, you know, hyperlinks if you wanted it, but it was off by default. They really stepped back and they went back to a Windows strategy. But it is fascinating to me. And I think everyone forgets this or didn't know it. But for 2 years, Microsoft was literally going to embrace the web in a way that I would say now maybe they're sort of doing, you know, finally that Windows is seen to be kind of obsolete or whatever. But they were going to do this 20 years ago. So, sorry, I've talked a lot, Mary Jo, but covered the trial and has some, I think, has some interesting personal information or information, firsthand information, I should call it.
Yeah, so when we were talking about what to talk about on the show today, we were both saying there's not a lot going on out there. But then Paul had just published this article and we both were kind of in the same place saying, you know what, we're coming full circle in a way with what you just wrote about. And I would even add, there was another time in Microsoft's history when Steven Sinofsky was running Windows, and then they brought in Ray Ozzie. And Ray Ozzie kept warning them, you guys need to do more things with services and the web. And Sinofsky was fighting that, right? And he was representing, he was like Alchin in the debate, right? He was, we're Windows, and it's going to be Windows first, and everything has to be kowtowing to Windows.
In both cases, the same side won. Yeah. And was wrong.
Windows 1 both times.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
Well, but you now understand, we're coming... Microsoft's protecting its core, what it sees as its core business. What any company has, this is the innovator's dilemma. What any company has a hard time doing is seeing how their core business is going to be destroyed by something, an oncoming technology.
This is not my article, but the thing that I thought of as I was writing this was the strength of Apple under Steve Jobs, that instead of running in fear from something that could destroy your central business, you embrace it and you be the one that disrupts it.
He wasn't big on panic. He was big on, figuring out what's going on and responding.
What's going to destroy the iPod, which became their biggest business? Like, what could it be?
Let it be us.
Well, it could be phones, right? Yeah.
Let it be us.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they looked at phones. They did that one deal with Motorola. It was terrible. And I said, no, we're going to do this ourselves. We're going to kill our own business.
Yeah.
And that was the decision that Microsoft did make very briefly with Windows. You got to remember, just from sort of a historical perspective, and the reason I write this series is because with Microsoft killing UWP now, there's a lot of uncertainty about the app platform and the store and what's going on there and blah, blah, blah. And people have been saying, are they going to rewrite the core apps in Win32? Well, that doesn't make any sense. No, they're not. Of course not. Win32 was – no one was writing Win32 apps 20 years ago, like new Win32 apps, right? There were frameworks that go on top of Win32. And there are many, many, different versions of those things over the years. But, even in 1996, they sort of understood, like, this thing has run its course. When they invented Win32, they made it look just like what they later called Win16, the original thing dating back from 1983. This was a garbage API. Like, it was really poorly written. It literally dates from the 80s, badly defined. It's a straight C functions. It's terrible. And instead of making something elegant and nice for Win32, they just copied it and made it 32-bit. It's terrible. Nobody wants to write code to that stuff. And so here they were, like, really early on saying, look, let's walk away from this and do something elegant and good.
Mm. And for a little while, here's a couple little interesting tidbits and ironies. Silverberg, before he came to work at Microsoft to run Windows 95, worked for Apple on Lisa.
Yeah. That's right.
So, you're talking about...
I didn't know that. That's
Apple knew how to disrupt themselves, right? But maybe that's why Silverberg wasn't afraid of embracing the web.
You sent a couple of interviews over, one that you had with Jim Alchin, and then the second one from, I think it was Visual Studio Magazine or Visual Studio, with Silverberg.
Yeah.
And he uses the same kind of phrases 20 years later. It's kind of interesting. But he was saying that, we tried to do this big bang thing with Lisa and it was a huge mistake. And what he said was at the time, he said the big company now that's like Microsoft used to be is Google. And this is back in 2006.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
And he says, you got to iterate. You iterate. And he says, that's the model. And, Microsoft has examples of when they did that and it was very effective. They have examples of when they tried to just blow the world up. What do you call it? Boil the ocean,
Yeah.
And, those things never worked. Cairo was an example of that. Longhorn was an example of that. He wanted to build a new platform on the internet. And because it was this thing they could kind of iterate on, and because of the whole internet speed thing, he's like, look, we can do this over time. We don't have to wait 3 years or 5 years between releases. We can just keep iterating.
Yep.
And, it was taken away. So.
Right. Right. In the end, Alchin convinced Gates that he was right. And so both Alchin and Silverberg ended up leaving fairly close to each other. I think Silverberg first and then Alchin. But what kind of strikes me about all of this now is I feel like it's less risky for Microsoft to disrupt itself now because Windows is on the wane. And when they were doing this, Windows wasn't on the wane. Right. It was growing still.
That's why what they did at the time was incredible. One of the things.
And it didn't seem crazy. Right. Did it? Like when I found out that Alchin won out of the Alchin Silverberg thing, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense because Windows is what Microsoft's all about. Right.
Yeah. I got to say, Alchin was made out to be some kind of a villain in the antitrust trial.
Right.
They took his memos and they made him look like a jerk. when a computer scientist says in a memo to his boss that we need to leverage our core asset, he's not thinking antitrust. He's not thinking anti-competitive. He's thinking like any logical person would. You take advantage of your biggest strengths. He's like, what did you mean by the word leverage? What does anyone mean by the word leverage? You take advantage of your strengths. I mean, it's crazy, but Microsoft, whatever, they had a monopoly, but Both of those men thought they were doing the right thing for the company.
Right.
Yeah. Balchin saw this established business. He saw it had lots of runway left. It was generating billions and billions of dollars every quarter. Why do you walk away from that? Silverberg was taking more of a stance like, look, we're not very well respected in the industry. This is our chance to make our things standards, to interoperate with other companies, to partner rather than compete with a lot of these guys, just like they're doing now, by the way. These were all his ideas. And he was also looking out for what he thought was the best interest of the company.
Right.
They couldn't have been more diametrically opposed from each other.
I know. And then, you know, another irony, right, is during the antitrust trial, you made reference to Alchin's memos coming public, but also there was that famous video that showed, it was meant to show that if you decoupled Internet Explorer from Windows, it would cripple Windows. And it was all doctored, and they found out during the trial that it wasn't even an accurate video, that somebody had spliced it up and made it into this
not to make it fake, but they were just trying to make the point. I mean, in other words, they were actually right about, but it was just because of the artificial way they had integrated Internet Explorer into Windows.
Right. But
all
it
they had
was
to do
funny
was hide the icon for the browser.
But Alchin was the one defending Internet Explorer being part of the operating system, even though he had been the one kind of fighting the web stuff, right? So,
interesting. Yeah, the reason, though, is during the time, so right after Windows 95 shipped, Brad Silverberg became the leader of a new division called the Internet Platform and Tools. And what they gave him was Internet Explorer with the mandate that you're going to integrate this into the shell. So 95NT. From Alchin's perspective, as the leader of NT and then of both Windows 9X and NT, you had just taken away this core part of the operating system and handed off to a different part of the company. They had all these like amazing DEC engineers and NT computer scientists.
Right.
And then they had these kids out of college working on IE. And they were saying, hey, yeah, we're going to hand you the code. This will be your shell. And that didn't sit well with him, right? And so I think part of his goal over those 2 years was to get that back, which, by the way, he eventually did. And some of the first things he did, by the way, were to turn off that shell integration nonsense, which was terrible because it was really poorly written. Mm-hmm. And then he also had someone go to the Microsoft website and remove every single instance of a reference to IE as a standalone product. Because he's like, telling. We can't. Well, it is and it isn't. So one of the big issues he had with IE was that they weren't just shipping a browser. When you got IE4 a year before Windows 98 came out, you got all the shell integration pieces. You got 17 standalone apps like Outlook Express, NetShow, NetMeeting, FrontPage Express, all this other stuff. He was like, guys, that's part of Windows. Like that's you've just taken away the reason people will pay for an upgrade. You know, you just handed that away for free. And of course, the internet guys will be like, that's what the internet's like. We give away stuff for free. And he's like, no, this is like a business. Like you ship a browser, that's fine. But you gave everything else away. So he was really, that's what he was opposed to. You know, and he got it back. And, eventually they got it right. I think if you look at something like, I don't know, Windows 2000, the shell integration is not a sore spot anymore by that point, but it's also not all that web nonsense they were talking about two, three years earlier.
It's so weird to think, okay, first we had a total defense of Windows, then we kind of came back to that again, and now I don't think we're going to come back to that again, but
well, it's been very cyclical, right?
No, it's not central anymore. And even if it were, I feel like the world has changed so much too. That it's just so
there's
different.
There's so much here. You could say, well, you know, Linux, which didn't matter at all at the time, or Mac OS, those guys were also integrating web browsers into their operating systems. And fair enough. I mean, they were not monopolies, you know, which is part of the problem. Yeah. You know, Microsoft had to operate under slightly different rules, but it's hard not to look at this and think like what could have been, because if you go back and look at this keynote, it's rather fascinating. I mean, he was really talking about stripping out everything that was classic Windows and just replacing it, you know, with HTML.
That was what year?
Eventually.
97?
Did you say? Six, I guess. It was probably 96.
Why do you think they gave it up? Was it just technically not a good idea, or was it strategically not a good idea? Because, I mean, remember the original Facebook app was an HTML app, which they abandoned after the performance was so bad that they said, oh, no, we can't do this. I wonder if Microsoft encountered the same.
I think there's this thing that Microsoft does a lot, and this is probably very common human nature kind of stuff, but you make these decisions based on things that seem to make sense, right? So, for example, people, you know, the web is a one-click interface. You click on a hyperlink, and it does something. If you mouse over something, it kind of highlights, and you have that form of interaction. Windows at that time, and today, by the way, too, is a double-click. If you want to open an icon or open a file, you double-click it. And they said, well, look, we'll make – that's confusing. Obviously, that's confusing. We'll make Windows a single-click interface. Yeah. Well, as it turns out, that's actually not that confusing. Even though the reasons we do things differently between the two are historical in nature, whatever, but first of all, that technology
– I see people all the time double-clicking links in the browser.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah. But it's – no one ever – well, in – obviously, they tested this through a beta program for Windows 98 or IE4 or both. And as it turns out, the code was terribly, horribly written, very unreliable, would crash a lot. And when you crash the browser, which is the shell, which is the desktop,
that's
pretty big, you get this thing where like everything on the screen refreshes and all your windows go away.
It's funny. Didn't Steve Jobs, when the iPhone first came out, said, yeah, we're going to make it all HTML apps? And now we got PWA.
Well, no,
I wonder if this is history repeating.
Yeah, I don't know. Don't get me wrong. I think it could have been done correctly. What I'm saying is it wasn't. I mean, the code that the IE guys came up with at the time was terrible, and this is something that should have been done under the watchful eye of the Dave Cutler, you know, Jim Algin guys. Like, it should have been something that came from the NT team. Those guys understood the shell. And it shouldn't have been the kids working on IE. I mean, it was a kind of a sore point for a little while because I think it was the ND option pack included IE4. You could change the shell over to this thing. And it was like this NT at the time was perceived as this like rock solid bulletproof kind of thing. And then IE happened and suddenly it wasn't. And it wasn't just that. They moved a bunch of stuff into the kernel and whatever. But it just seemed like it just kind of undermined their efforts to make NT something special.
Well, there you have
it. Bad old days. I know. It's funny because when Paul published this article today, you can totally go down the rabbit hole, right? I just started looking at all these old things I had written about, you know, Altman versus Silverberg, and like when we used to get to interview these guys all the time. It wasn't like when Silverberg was running Windows 95, we talked to him like almost every week.
Those days are long. That was though. You know, whatever the size of the team was, if the Vista team was 5,000 people, the 95 team was 500 people. I mean, it was not even close.
It was very and this was a time when they were trying to grow the business, and so they wanted the publicity, and they made these execs available to us all the time. We get to interview them constantly, and there's so many articles when you start looking about things they were thinking at the time and how the strategies were changing. And now you think about how seldom we get to talk to people in charge of anything at Microsoft.
Learned their lesson. You don't talk about this stuff in public.
Yeah. Sure.
Well,
yeah,
actually, that might have been, you know, there's all these overreaction, course correction kind of things. Yeah. You know, Altman. Yeah. Was very transparent. He was just out there. He would just talk, and he'd say, "Look, this is what I want to do."
It's great for us.
And when some of that stuff didn't come together, they sort of, you know, there were people at Microsoft said, "See, that's the problem. He talks too much."
Yep. Right.
And then the next thing you get is, you know, the Soviet Union comes in and it's Sinofsky.
It's a non-person. Yeah.
I know. I know. Yeah. That guy.
It's his fault. It's all his fault.
I don't know. I got along great with Altman, but my understanding is that Mary Jo did not necessarily. And why would that be Mary Jo?
No, so for a while I got along great with them. And then I wrote an article when Windows 2000 came out that based on an email that somebody forwarded me that said it still had 63,000 bugs left in it. And after that, I was like persona non grata with Jim Altman for
you know,
like
write
a few
that
years.
Story. So yeah. Wasn't
trying to understand like what would be more damaging to the reputation of Windows 2000, A or B? A is Mary Jo's story that there are 63,000 bugs in a shipping product. B is, and I think it was Mark Rozenovich who uncovered this, that if you make two small changes to the registry, Windows NT workstation became Windows NT server. And instead of paying $1,500 for the license, you could pay $300 and you could get all of the functionality.
Yep. There's my article, February 2000. So I wrote this article based on an email that somebody forwarded to me, an internal email. And then I saw Jim Altman. Maybe it was at a PDC right after that. And he saw me and he's like, I'm so mad at you. I can't even look at your face. I can't look at you. And the PR people were like.
He was very gentlemanly too. So for him to be that upset.
That's funny.
He was shaking with anger. And later, one of his PR people said to me, so Jim said, I'm not ever talking to Mary Jo Foley again over my dead body. Wow. And I was like, okay, well. So when he was about to leave Microsoft, somebody intervened for me and I got an exit interview with him. And the first thing I said, because I'm such a jerk, was, hey, we're both alive. Neither of us are dead. And we're doing this interview. And the PR person looked at me like, you really just do that? Are you kidding?
I also had an excellent interview with Jim Altman, and I will say it was more lighthearted than yours.
No, but it ended up being really good, and you know what? We shook hands, and it felt good at the end. I was like, okay.
You were just doing your job.
He really is. He's a great guy. He was always a great guy.
Where is he now?
He left Microsoft in 2007 or so, I'm thinking, and He became a professional musician and retired.
What? Basically. Oh, that's great.
Yep.
Good for him.
Yep.
So he's got no worries now.
You may recall, we briefly toyed with using one of his songs asking him if we could use it.
That's right. You know what? So what's really interesting about him is he has never, since he left, I think, has never talked to anybody in the tech press. Like you've never seen him quoted about anything, talking about anything having to do with tech.
See if I can change that. One of the things I want to do is start interviewing people for the series. I've been meaning to do that. But he's
really?
A guy.
You're gonna do
it? Yeah. Him and Brad Silverberg. I'd like to speak to both those guys.
I think Silverberg will talk to you because he talks to people. And he's still in the industry. He works for Ignition Partners still, I think.
Yeah.
I think Steve Jobs.
Yeah, I see him on Facebook. I'm friends with him on Facebook.
Jim Altman here.
We are picking up lots and lots of new members of the Mac family. And we couldn't be happier. As a matter of fact, here's one that might be coming on soon. Jim Altman at Microsoft was.
This was his last statement.
If he didn't work for Microsoft, he would buy a Mac, and he's retiring soon. So
he did say that.
This guy's so misquoted. What he was trying to do was drive home the point that the quality wasn't where it should be.
Right.
It's just a guy being honest. You know, like just.
That's the worst thing you can do in corporate America.
Yeah. Yeah, he was an engineer. You know,
he was an engineer. That's why we love engineers. I always prefer talking to the engineers versus the
marketing
people. My
dad Cutler never talks to the press, you know?
Yeah. No, I don't want to interview CEOs. Well, maybe I'd interview Satya because he's really interesting. But mostly you want to interview engineers. And he's an engineer. Yeah. Maybe that's what makes him so interesting. Yeah. Engineers deal in black and white, in truth or false.
Yeah.
True or false.
Right? Yeah. Totally. He left it in 2007. Altman did.
Yeah. The weirdest thing in some ways about the story, because I obviously was, like I said, I was aware of the Silverberg Altman stuff. I obviously aware of all the stuff that came out in the trial. Yeah. I didn't recall them ever standing up and saying we're changing Windows into HTML. I had to go back and be like, are you serious? Like you kind of watch that again and again, like this, did they really say this? Yeah. And then, of course, knowing that it never happened. So, and then being curious about that. So that all kind of came together for me. But of course, the interesting thing about this, in a way, when you really think about it, is Bill Gates is like, he's pretty easy to change, isn't he? Like, this is a guy who's just tunnel visioning down a certain path. And then eventually someone's chipping at the side. And he's like, yep, we're doing something completely different. And literally, he did that, of course, with the internet to begin with. In the wake of this stuff, when Altman finally got through to him, he literally sent memos out where he said, guys, we're not doing this for customers. We're doing this for our strategy. We are going to hurt customers if we have to. We have to push Windows. You're going to ruin Java.
He said that out loud.
Yeah, he said them in memos. He wrote this in memos. Yeah.
Oh my God!
And
that's why it was so great when you get one of these things. You're like, yes.
Oh, yeah. Don't put that
like
in
just
writing.
And again. Gates too. Engineer type, yep. Painfully honest. Just
yep.
You know, guileless.
Guileless. Yeah. There's a great word.
But the fact that he could be kind of flipped so easily, not, well, it took a while, but that he could just go in the complete opposite direction. I mean, I think most people, if you say, look, we kind of overdid it on the internet thing. Maybe we should scale that back. You're like, yeah, we could scale it back. He's like, no, we're turning it around. we're going right back to what we used to do before. And I mean, that itself is kind of insane.
I guess it means you trust your lieutenants if you're backing their play. But
he always seems to trust a different one, you know. Like know. Silverberg had his ear for a couple of years, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then eventually he didn't.
Yeah. That's you know what's going to be left. Super interesting? I'm sure you guys know. There's a Bill Gates documentary coming up on Netflix.
Yeah. Do you think September that'll be 20th. Good or just?
I wonder. So. It looked from the trailer. It looked very like glossy.
He cooperated with it. Which
he did.
Worries me.
But man, if somebody actually got him talking about some of the real things that happened at Microsoft,
it doesn't
it would
matter
be
really now, Bill. So tell the truth. Yeah,
I know. It would be so interesting.
The problem with Gates today is that you know he's asked every couple of years what his biggest mistake was, and his biggest mistake always matches whatever's going on at the time.
Yeah. Right.
And the number of times he's kind of changed that really bothers me. I think, unfortunately, his legacy is that not so great as a technologist, but was an amazing businessman. And he was the right person at the right time. And for all the good he did to drive the industry forward, there was a lot of bad he did to drive the industry backward and to stop innovation from happening. It's a real bro culture thing at Microsoft, which is probably very common in the 1990s.
It's still common today. Are you kidding?
Yeah. Okay. But just, you know, that was
before?
Part of his.
No, it's still
And also that kind of so Steve Jobs style of management where, like, you were either the greatest thing that's ever happened or the biggest pile of crap that's ever happened. Like, there's no in between. He's like this kindly Santa Claus, you know, getting rid of mosquitoes or whatever he's doing now. But he was the most terrible human being on earth when he ran Microsoft. He just was. And today it's kind of hard to believe because he's just like this kind, cuddly koala bear.
Maybe it's my imagination, but I think there's some correlation between being the richest man in the world and being a horrible human being. I don't know why.
Well, by the way, he does fall into my theory about genius, right, where anyone who is too good at one thing is going to be horrible at lots of other things.
That's interesting.
And I think the thing that he was really good at is something most people misunderstand, which again was not technology, it was business.
Yeah.
No,
he
was
really
business.
I think he was good on business genius.
And vision, yeah.
Visionary. If you saw some of his Comdex keynotes when he laid out some of the futuristic things he was thinking about, it was pretty inspirational. Yeah.
Do you think those were him or some PR person's vision? Yeah.
I mean, so they were his speechwriter, but I feel like he depended way less on speechwriters than probably CEOs like Satya do today.
Those were great speeches. They were really exciting.
Well, if you like whiny, nasally speakers,
you come out of them and you just be like, wow, mind blown. Yeah. Like, when was the last time you came out of Microsoft?
He made those great videos and
There was a bandwidth thing with him. And you think back to someone like Steve Wozniak was like this. Steve Wozniak was a genius for that era. He was the guy who could take a bunch of chips on a table, combine them into one chip, and you could release an 8-bit computer or a disk drive or whatever. When things moved forward to 16-bit and graphics and the Mac, and he was out of his depth. And Gates actually lasted a lot longer than Wozniak did, but the time where Gates' ability to run the ship by himself kind of fell apart was this time. This is exactly when it was.
Oh, that's interesting.
And eventually he had to hand over the business to Steve Ballmer, which for the Microsoft product groups was a disaster because that meant he would be more involved personally. And they hated that because anything he touched was destroyed. You think about it, and this continued for years later. All the things he was personally invested in at Microsoft were all the things that never worked. The things he let go, like NT, those all happened. You know, like the next thing he destroyed after this was tablet PC. He had to get that out, you know, the biggest thing in the world. And it never materialize into anything important until Apple did it, you know, with the iPad or whatever. I mean, I just, I don't know. I think of, you know, like anyone, like we all have our limits. I think, you know, he was the right guy. He was the MacArthur type. He was the right guy for the time until he wasn't.
Let's take a break and come back. We do have some IFA news, hardware stuff, Windows 10, and a eulogy for Flash. Paul's going to deliver a little eulogy.
Dearly beloved.
We are gathered here not to bury Flash, but to crucify it.
Yes.
Our show today brought to you by a brand new advertiser, and I'm really thrilled to welcome Melissa to the show. Wouldn't it be great if there actually was a person named Melissa. Yeah. I seem to remember it's the founders. I can't remember. It's a relative of the founder. Anyway, Melissa cleans up your data. How many times have you looked at a mailing list and it's, you know, half of it is garbage? This happens all the time. Bad addresses mean wasted money, duplicate records, bouncing emails. It's time to come clean with Melissa. Every address in Melissa's database, they cover them all from Adelaide, Australia to Zipaquirá, Colombia. Delta Faucet uses Melissa. Z1 Motorsports, Car2Go, they all use Melissa. Actually, Delta Faucet was able to improve their call center processes with global address auto completion, and that made a big difference to their customers. Melissa reduced the fraudulent e-commerce transactions for Z1 Motorsports by 90%. Melissa, just like the girl's name, M-E-L-I-S-S-A, provides a full spectrum of data quality protection for your customer data. You can do everything from verify postal addresses, mobile numbers, email addresses. It's so good, you can update the addresses of customers that have moved, eliminate duplicate records. I need this just for my own mailing list. I can imagine if you're a company with a mailing list of 1 million people. Every year we mail our Christmas cards. Every year Bill Atkinson says the same thing. Would you please clean up your address book? This is terrible. We're going to use Melissa this year. And by the way, you can get additional insight into your data with Melissa's analytics too. Easily build address verification and customer data validation into your applications. With Melissa's APIs, CRM cloud connectors, their e-commerce plugins. Or you could just upload a file for a quick clean. Melissa is also, of course, very serious, as they have to be, about managing your data securely. They undergo independent security audits constantly to reinforce their commitment to data security, privacy, and compliance requirements. I took a tour of Melissa's systems. I talked to their founder and was very impressed. It's SOC2 compliant, HIPAA compliant, GDPR compliant. These days you have to be. You know, mailers spend about $20 billion a year in undeliverable mail. Every address counts. Make sure that every customer that signed up for your list gets the email they wanted. Don't lose cash. Don't lose customers. Bad data happens to good companies. That's why 10,000 organizations worldwide trust Melissa to get their customer data clean and accurate. If you're sitting there and the boss has said, what is wrong with our address list? What's with all these bounce backs? You need Melissa. And here's the best thing. We can get our Christmas card list cleaned free. Get started today with 25,000 records cleaned for free. Just to give you an idea of what Melissa can do, you'll be blown away. Melissa.com/twit. M-E-L-I-S-S-A. Melissa.com/twit. Or call 1-800-MELISSA and find out more. I love that. Bad data happens to good companies. Don't let it happen to you. With Melissa. Welcome, Melissa, to the Windows Weekly family. And if you're listening and you want to support Windows Weekly, don't forget melissa.com/twit. IFA is going on in Berlin right now as we speak.
Yep.
IFA used to be a radio conference. It's a really old conference. And it was It's so old that it was... As I remember, it was for radio sets and things like that in the 30s.
Wow.
What is it
You know
today?
What it is now is it's fall Comdex.
Yeah.
Or CES.
I should say fall CES. Excuse me. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There are two major events at which most of the industry announces new computers. One of them is CES and the other one is IFA. So what we're seeing now are computers that in peripherals and whatnot, most of which will arrive in time for the holidays.
Oh, nice. Anything cool, interesting, different?
No, nothing interesting.
You know, it's so funny because the PC industry is so much more innovative. And, there's so many flavors of PCs out there.
Yeah.
From the Surface Go to the Lenovo, you know, T series. I've got both sitting right in front of me, and they're very different, which is nice. Yeah. I like the choice. But you're saying,
I will say, come on. That is one of the things that Bill Gates said. You know, he said he once described Windows as the most, you know, versatile software that the industry had ever seen. And you know, obviously you can make arguments for iOS or Android, whatever. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's this thing has withstood so many different generational changes, and it does run on a kind of a neat variety of devices. So there should be something for everybody in there, really.
But you're saying nothing that really...
Well, no. What I'm really saying is we're still in the midst of it. We've only heard from a couple of companies. We haven't heard from the heaviest hitters in the industry yet, like Lenovo, HP, Dell, et cetera. So those might come later today, tomorrow, you know, with the time change and everything. So far, we've gotten some stuff from Acer, some gaming PCs, some they have a $14,000 gaming chair that's like a it's like the seat that like Han Solo sat in when he was firing the, you know, the guns on the bottom of the Millennium Falcon.
That tells you something about gamers if they'd spend $14,000 for a chair.
Yeah, no kidding.
Wow.
That's crazy. But nothing, you know, there's a Razer gaming Ultrabook, which I think they're describing
as
the first gaming
phone
Ultrabook.
Too, a gaming Android phone from Razer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for €1,200.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's still, unfortunately, because of the timing of our show, we're right at the start of it. We just haven't seen anything huge yet. I think what we're looking forward to most
are... It's just all the, like, thinner, lighter, right? Like, that's, you can kind of predict that.
Next generation Intel.
Yeah.
Right. I'd like to see something about the 8CX stuff. You know, I know Lenovo, I don't remember when this was, June-ish or May, whatever, kind of previewed a folding laptop. They said, remember, that would run some kind of Windows. They didn't say what it was exactly. You know, maybe it'll be stuff along those lines. So I bet by next week we should have some more. It'll be a little more interesting than what we've seen, at least, you know, for our interests so far.
You want to see a picture from – see, I don't know if people – when I mention this, I don't know if people believe me when I say IFA goes back to the 1930s. It was a radio show originally. Let me show you.
This is going to be like an awesome black and white image from the
30s. It is. I'm trying to find this on Wikipedia.
Right Berlin in the 30s. Nothing could ever go
like
wrong
it.
In such
they
a magical
did stop
place.
For something happened. I don't know. They stopped in 1939.
Something might have happened.
Yeah, 1924, 1939. And then there was this gap to 1950.
Something.
Surprising.
It's the Internationale Funkausstellung Berlin. It's the Berlin radio show.
Have either of you ever been to IFA?
No, and I'd love to go. Here's a picture. That's Albert Einstein opening the 1930 IFA.
Wow.
See his crazier hair than Bill Gates had.
Yeah.
Yep.
Look at everybody looks normal except for him.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. The guy in the bottom left looks like he's
a future Nazi,
Ill.
I think.
Exactly.
I think the war is coming. He doesn't look too nice. Isn't that a great picture? I love that image.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And Einstein's looking at a radio. The state of the art technology. Man, this kid does look like a brown shirt. Holy cow.
He really does.
Jeez Louise.
Yep. He's going to get
the future is ours. The future belongs to me. Shortly after Einstein left Germany.
Yeah. Also, not coincidentally.
So other hardware stuff, this is an announcement that everybody's been waiting for. USB 4 is finally here.
Yeah, and actually, you know, Mary Jo and I were just talking about this because they just announced the spec, so I assume we're not going to hear anything this week about
not today.
New USB 4 devices.
Apparently next
probably
year.
CES.
Or next IFA.
Yeah.
No, definitely. We'll definitely have this stuff at the market by then. But for anyone worried about a standards change, don't worry. It's just USB-C port with Thunderbolt 3 capabilities. So formally being integrated into the spec now.
Yeah.
So I believe it's, 40 gigabits per second?
40 gigabits.
Transfer rate. And then, you know, power, display, storage, expansion, et cetera.
Because the big difference between USB and... Thunderbolt and FireWire before it is that USB is a client server, you know, master slave thing, and the other is Thunderbolt is peer to peer,
right?
And DMA access too. It's direct memory access. So it's USB is different. I wonder if they're going to preserve that difference. They're able to get to 40 gigabits, which is that's Thunderbolt 3 speed.
Which is the big thing.
But in terms of this upcoming Surface announcement, don't hold your breath for Thunderbolt.
Come on, please.
That is really disappointing to me.
Think there's not going to be USB-C?
This USB-C, was a problem 3 years ago.
Thunderbolt.
Thunderbolt. Wow.
Well, they say backwards compatibility. Whenever anybody asks them, it's like, backwards compatibility.
With what? Why?
Their own connector, I guess.
You can still have both.
I know, you could.
You don't have to. You don't have to give it up. You can.
Right, you could have.
If there are businesses
a lot of
that have
ports,
peripherals,
right.
And they want to.
It's chipset specific, though. I mean, it has to do with what they're getting.
I got bad news for Microsoft. USB 4 Thunderbolt. This is being integrated into CPUs. So at some point you can't not have it.
Right.
It's just amazing to me that they've held out for this long and will apparently, if I understand what Mary Jo is saying, will continue doing it through the end of this year. I mean, this is a bigger problem than some people understand because these devices have a several year lifespan. We're not talking about, I don't have any Thunderbolt 3 peripherals today, so why would I care about this? It's because the whole world is going USB-C.
Yeah.
The Thunderbolt 3 is the headroom on that is amazing. I mean, that's your expansion. We're looking out a decade now. That's good enough for long, long time.
I'm just telling you what the rumors are saying. And the rumors say USB-C, but no Thunderbolt on the new surfaces that come out.
USB-C is better than nothing. I will say that.
Yep.
Oh, I'm starting to see some news now from IFA. Mm-hmm. Apparently somebody announced a really big speaker.
Yep. Right.
Wow.
It's a smart speaker. And guess what? It doesn't run Cortana.
It doesn't? What?
This speaker, not yet Echo enabled. But any day, this
coming
is
coming soon.
For those of you listening, I'm showing another picture from 1930s Berlin, and it's a giant horn.
It looks like one of those. Yeah, it's like a giant version of those horns that people that were hard of hearing used to hold up to their ears.
Yeah, and apparently that's a flapper listening to the horn. Right. She's cupping her ear, though, which seems superfluous. Moving right along. HoloLens 2 on sale soon.
Yeah, maybe this month.
Nice.
Actually,
at least that's what Harry Shum said. Harry Shum, who is...
By the way, there was no follow-up at all on that, was there?
Yeah, so Harry Shum, who is the vice president of AI plus research at Microsoft, who you think might know something about when the HoloLens will be out, said at a conference in China, HoloLens goes on sale in September. But when we contacted Microsoft to verify that he had said that correctly, they just said, we have not provided a time frame for when it will be out.
He must have literally just blurted it out.
Yeah. So my guess is if it's not September, it's soon. It's already, the designs are already passed through the FCC's website. And Microsoft announced the HoloLens HoloLens 2 back at Mobile World Congress, which was months ago, but then never gave us a ship date. All we know is we know everything about it pretty much. We know the specs. We know the pricing, how there are going to be three different variants. There's going to be the $3,500 HoloLens 2 Developer Edition. Then there's a subscription version where you can actually pay for it over time, $125 per user per month. And then there's just a plain old HoloLens 2 device SKU for people who just want that for $3,500 also.
So it's not like Home, Pro, and Enterprise?
No E3, E5 designation. No. We've both tried it. We've gotten to wear it a few times. And as we've said before, the field of view is much better. And
I think it's
the gestures
fantastic.
Are getting better.
I was really critical of the field of view in the first version, as you may recall.
No, were you?
It was terrible.
The letter opener?
The mail slot.
Mail opening in a door.
It was like watching a Sergio Leone movie. The new one solves that problem. I mean, it's fairly amazing how much better it is.
Yeah. And it's much more comfortable, easier to get on your head and fit
That's
it
true.
Onto your head properly. I'm curious how it's going to work with my glasses because I had that weird not a field of view problem, but a depth perception problem because of my progressive lenses.
You couldn't grab stuff with it, right? You were kind of...
Yeah.
That's funny.
So hopefully that's fixed. Or I'm fixed.
You could
fixed.
Use that, have a Surface Pro in your lap, and then what else?
They should release HoloLenses with prescription lenses, right? I mean,
that would be pretty cool.
I think that's interesting. The end game
well,
is
I think
for all
I,
this stuff.
My understanding was they thought they had solved that problem. And I think, Mary, do you have a certain eye, not an eye problem, but like a...
Astigmatism?
No,
yeah,
I don't.
Something like
She's
that.
She's got presbyopia. No. That's the problem.
Well, you will now, because that HoloLens thing is going to destroy your eyesight.
I know. No, I just couldn't, like, figure out, you know, because I have progressives, like, I was trying to line it up with where I could see the hologram, and I couldn't get it to work.
So progressives, you have distance vision at the top of your glasses, and as you look down through the glasses, it goes to it transitions to reading.
Right.
And, of course... I guess I don't know what that did to your.
You know what?
You're looking up like this.
So Mary Jo obviously doesn't wear contacts. Do you wear contacts, Leo?
Yeah.
So one of the weird issues, as most people listening to the show now probably understand, is that when you hit middle age, you can't read anymore.
You become a Presbyterian.
So you're holding a book or a menu in a restaurant. You kind of
The restaurants are getting darker. The print is getting smaller.
Yeah.
So the way that my eye doctor solved that problem for me is they bumped up the prescription on one eye and they bumped down the one on the other eye.
That's called monovision.
And I got to tell you, I spent a lot of my life now going like,
I have a distance, my contacts in my right eye's distance and my left eye's reading.
Oh, you do? Wow.
It's
takes
really
some
confusing.
Getting used to. For me, it wasn't hard because I don't use both eyes at the time anyway. I've always had this kind of weird thing. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I just read with my
left eye. Oh, no, I find myself at night, I'll be watching TV, and I'll be like, what's going on here?
Covering one eye.
It's okay for reading. I mean, I find myself in a restaurant, I can read a menu where my wife cannot or whatever, but I don't know. What a terrible problem.
Yeah. It's called age.
Yeah,
and
that's
growing,
the terrible problem.
Let me tell you,
Paul,
growing out your hair, it's not going to fix it.
Yeah.
Not going to fix it. Hey, here's another fun IFA fact. Mm-hmm. The cassette was announced at IFA. When do you think was? By Philips. They introduced the compact audio cassette as a medium for audio storage. The first cassette recorder was shown. What year do you think?
So Philips was also first with CD, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah. That's right.
What year?
They own the patent.
That's a good question.
So a cassette, what year was the cassette? 70. Yeah.
1963.
Really?
Jeez, wow, really?
Yeah.
I was going to say early 70s.
This stuff takes a long time to percolate through, right? Because, it was the 70s before we had everybody use cassettes. Mm-hmm. We were using reel-to-reel still for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then you're right, 8-track. I kind of missed that 8-track generation somehow.
Yeah, I did too.
Thank God. Mm. In 1933, the Volksempfänger, a Nazi-sponsored radio receiver was introduced, ordered by Dr. Joseph Goebbels.
Oh, wow.
It was the People's Radio. The People's Radio. And this is in 1933.
It just got one radio station.
Goebbels, who was the propaganda minister for the Nazi, realized
they
that if we
could
get
sure
radios in every home. And they did. They sold 100,000 units at the IFA alone.
Wow.
So it was a great success.
Did you get like a free copy of Mein Kampf with it or something?
Well,
or how
just
does
shows
that work?
You. I mean, this is well before the Nazis. This is when they first were starting to take power. It's just the Goebbels realized that I need mass media. I need the ability to speak directly to the people. He didn't have Twitter, of course.
Yeah. No, that would have been different. He would have had a blue, like the blue star or whatever.
We need Volks Twitter. Let's see here. Moving along to Windows 10. What are you laughing at?
Windows. I was just thinking about that. Obviously, when you started to talk about Nazis, I just found it really funny.
I know. It's hysterical, isn't it? Yeah. The first television set was shown in 1939. A TV designed to be affordable for everybody. Plans for large-scale manufacture thwarted by the outbreak of World War II. Color TV was also introduced in 1939.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So the IFA has this great long history. Mm-hmm. It's one of the oldest industrial exhibitions in
the
world.
That's way earlier than I would have thought, too.
Yeah. Yes. It's really interesting. So I think, who knows, you'll be seeing something futuristic at IFA this week.
This year, we're just getting laptops.
Laptops.
Yep.
Laptops, that's all.
Today, we're not going to look back as fondly on that.
I got a new laptop I think Mary Jo would enjoy. Did I show you this?
Oh, yeah? What?
I already did this.
Which one?
What's this?
He has a new laptop.
I think I already did this last week.
Oh, you did? Yeah. Yep. You know what? As I said, I could totally use that.
That would be perfect for you. Nice key travel.
Well, except you can't see that screen.
Clickety.
No, that's true.
Your presbyopia screen.
The screen's a little small.
Well, no, it's big letters, though. It's only four lines.
It's like, right. You can see four characters at a time.
I'm going to put some batteries in here. I wonder if this works. I would love it.
Oh, you know it's going to work fine.
It's going to work.
I bet it will work.
Things like that were built to last.
It uses... wait a minute. This isn't a battery. Wait 1 minute. Paul,
is that
you're
a cassette?
No, this is something wild. You got to explain to me what to do here, Paul. I took the lid off and it looks like
it's like an EEPROM or something.
It's a write ROM.
Oh, a literal ROM.
It's a write ROM and then there's room for another ROM.
Well,
this is four AA batteries. Maybe this is the battery compartment.
Do you think it was CMOS yet? Or was it, what was before CMOS?
Oh, man, what was before CMOS?
CMOS. It was probably just
called like AMOS
CMOS?
Or...
AMOS.
This is, no, this is like a prom or an EEPROM. Programmable.
Yeah, it's crazy looking.
Memory.
Yep.
Yeah, from 1985.
It's user serviceable.
Yeah, it even
don't
has
bend little, any of those little feet.
Little ribbons so you can pull it right out.
You ever spend time with like a chip like that, and they had little prong feet, and you had to like get a little screwdriver in there to line them up.
What
preceded CMOS? NMOS.
Really?
NMOS. There you go. Yeah, there were definitely NMOS. Two manufacturing processes before CMOS.
That's
like, CMOS, NMOS. Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna
back
go
then
get
you could
AA.
Just you could draw a chip on paper and make it happen. And you just make it happen.
It was easy. You could
see it. You know.
Yeah.
Not like these wafer things we have today.
Yeah, so and now it's all like microscopic. Yeah.
Retcon says CMOS was preceded by NOMOS.
Yep.
So
NOMOS.
NOMOS. Windows 10. I'm going to go get some AA batteries.
All right.
I got to boot this thing up.
Yeah, so we got a new Fast Ring. Windows 10 20H1 build 18970 last week. And it finally has the cloud reset option for Windows 10 PCs in there.
Right.
Which is good. Yep.
Yeah.
We knew this was coming, but it just hadn't been enabled for people Insider program.
The thing that's most interesting about this to me is a couple of shows ago, I was complaining about how many different forms of reset they have, and they do. It's kind of stupid.
Yeah.
The way they're implementing this, I haven't installed this, but just based on the shot and the discussion they had with it, is it looks like it's part of, it's part of the reset this PC functionality, meaning you can access it from within Windows 10 itself in the settings app or when you reboot into the recovery environment, which is fine. But it looks like it's an option, right? So in other words, when you go to reset the PC, it's like, well, do you want to save your data or not save your data? And it's like, do you want to use the version that's on a computer or you do want to download it from the internet? It's like, right. It should all be in one place. That's exactly how it should be. So it seems
to
me like
the version you're running though, right? Like it can't be. Yeah, I believe so. I believe it has to be the one you're running.
Okay. Well, that's not as good as I. Well, but it's still, any attempt at. Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is I was afraid they were going to introduce this as yet another option.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So by integrating it into Reset This PC, at least they're not introducing another option. So
true.
It's a good thing.
It is. Then there was this really confusing feature in it. About a new mode for people with the tablet, right? So if you have a 2-in-1 PC and you either fold back the keyboard or you remove the keyboard, you'll be able to stay in something they're calling desktop mode or something like that, which just means
it's funny that you don't know what it's called because the way it was written, it's impossible to tell.
Yeah.
That's not your fault.
So it has the icons have more spacing between them and it's meant so that you can keep using it without the mode looking completely different, right?
Yep, that's right. Yeah, so just so people understand, in case people don't understand how it works today, this is very confusing, so I'm going to high level this.
Good.
If you have a computer that can fold or spindle or whatever, like a convertible PC, or if you have a computer like Surface Book where you can actually unclip the display, it will by default prompt you and say, do you want to go into tablet mode? You can have that happen automatically if you want. And if you say yes, tablet mode kind of does a couple of things by default. But again, you can change all these options. You can the start menu will be full screen. The taskbar will not show any icons by default for running apps. Obviously, you're going to use the edges of the screen for navigation and so forth, and that's all fine. And so what this is if I, and again, I'm not running it. Their description is terrible, but I believe you're correct in the notes. You say it's a new tablet mode. I think that's right. And I think it's a further step away from the tablet experience from Windows 8, where they're kind of acknowledging, like, look, Windows 10 is a desktop operating system, so we're going to show you the desktop, which, by the way, is another thing you didn't see in tablet mode. We're going to show you the taskbar with all the icons. But they're going to be spread out so you can more easily hit them with your fingers. If you have a search box open, it will become an icon to save space because, again, when you're spreading out the icons, you're going to run out of space there. And otherwise, it just kind of works like it does normally. So Windows will run in Windows instead of being full screen and so forth.
Right. But they're still keeping the existing tablet mode, at least for now, right? Like, it's not going away.
I'm not 100% sure. So this is because of this feature, I haven't done it yet. But at the time when I first saw this, I thought maybe it's time for me to start running 20H1 because, again, their description is so vague and so terrible.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to tell exactly what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I can just give you my impression.
I think you need to run 20H1.
I need to have at least one PC because.
You do.
Yeah, it's
you
time. It's time. Yeah. It's time.
Although this is another one of these features available to a subset of users, I think.
Great.
I think so. So, this new option is only available to, quote, a portion of insiders. So you might not, even if you're running 20H1, you might not see it.
Or like a portion. Could I have a portion?
A portion of insiders.
I don't know what that means. Like, other times they've said 10% or they've said some, but a portion is new wording.
Jeez.
Is that the collective?
I think they're afraid to say because it's so small of a number that people get mad.
Yeah.
It's a murder of crows, herd of elephants, and a portion of insiders.
A portion of insiders.
That's what I say. When Mary Jo and I are at a bar at a Microsoft event, I'll be like, Mary Jo, there's a portion of insiders coming our way. Break the end
here
of the wall.
Here they come.
And protect yourself. A rabid portion of insiders on their way.
Yep.
Here they come.
I don't think that's even...
portion.
It feels like it's not English. It's a...
Yeah, well, welcome to the world of insider blog posts, Leo.
A fraction? A portion doesn't sound right.
Yeah, we don't really know. We don't know.
Yeah. I asked Raphael if there was some way to just enable these things that they were disabling, and his advice, which makes me believe that it isn't, because you're probably just given different bits, is possibly if you get one of the ISO releases for 19H2 or 20H1, those should have everything. That should be the full
experience.
I would think, and again, having not actually done it.
Yep. So we should mention that this week they released ISOs for the 20H1 build 18970, which is one we're talking about. And then also 19H2 build 18363, which is one of the many 19H2 builds that are out there. But this is the one that I think is supposed to have the new features enabled.
Is it you who called it an indecipherable mess?
Me, yes.
It does sound like
that
a
was
Mary
actually
Jo
Mary
full.
Jo.
It sounds like
sounds like something I would have written.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. You know, they went back after we had our rant on Windows Weekly, and I'm not saying they did this because of us, but they went back and they tried to re-explain what they were doing with 19H2, and the re-explanation didn't really clarify a whole lot.
It's just like a fine line. It just keeps getting better with age, you know?
Yeah. Mm. I was talking to somebody who I can't name, but the person said to me, you know, you guys have been hard on 19H2. It's like we're building the plane while it's running down the runway. And I said, yep, that's exactly what it feels like.
Yeah. Maybe
that's
what
not
you should
something
do
to
is
celebrate.
Not run the plane.
No. Yeah. No.
You understand that everything they're doing, they're self-imposed.
Yeah.
You don't have
we're
do
so
this
proud of the fact that we're doing it this way.
No, I'm glad I'm glad they're going to do the build the way they're doing it. So I don't want to just rag on it because I think it's smart. What they're doing is making the H2 build a small thing with the features turned off, but
that's smart. But then you have to say,
but. But the testing part of this has been very confusing. That's all I'll say.
Has been terrible. An undecipherable mess, as you say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep. It's terrible.
What a fine mess you've got us into. All right. So the ISOs are out for insiders of some sort. When will we see 19H2? It's not 1909.
Yeah, actually, it is 1909.
Yes, it is. So
soon,
yeah, suddenly
TM.
It is September, isn't
it's
it?
A party
it
like it's 1909. Yeah.
It should RTM this month. Right?
Okay.
It could RTM today.
Do you think it's ready to RTM?
No one can tell you, Leo. No one's testing it.
No
you know,
one
knows. They won't let us look at it.
Yeah.
It's just
weird.
When they do release it finally, they don't call it RTM, as we know. But I'll be curious to see what they list as the features that are in this, because I feel like we don't have a full picture of what actually are the features that at some point will be turned on.
If only they had a program where people could test those features. They might call it the Insider Program.
PC. We need a ring of people who are testing it. Like ring. Maybe we could just call ring. Them the portion ring.
They put the portion.
PC
right,
guy.
So
you
like the fast portion, the slow portion.
The chat room is not in the portion. He says, I'm on 19H2, but I'm in the group which has no features enabled.
Yeah, right. Which is most people, right? Most people which don't just, have features enabled.
That's just 1903 is what you're in.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Yep.
Interesting. Well,
listen, I've been begging for sanity, and
I'm just glad they've solved their testing issues.
Have they?
What?
Have they though?
You know what? To be fair, one of the things I've complained about with Windows lately is that inconsistent nature by which they roll out things like new icons over time, or that fluent design language stuff, right, over time. You know, the truth is Microsoft has always kind of been half-assed about this kind of stuff, right? I mean, if we're being honest, you know, remember when they introduced the ribbon in Office 2007, probably? Was that a release? 2010? I don't remember. Whenever the first release was, whichever release it was. Only the core apps got the ribbon, right? Outlook didn't get the ribbon in the first release, right? And because of the way that Office was developed at the time, and actually, well, no, it isn't really anymore, but you know, we had to wait 3 more years for the next release of Office, and then Outlook got the ribbon and maybe some other apps, I remember. Maybe this is a rich Microsoft tradition we should be celebrating instead of complaining about, you know, the half-assitude of how they do things.
The half-assitude. Okay, wait a minute, I got to write that one down, too.
You know, you wouldn't be writing, you'd only have field guides every 3 years if we were still doing it
the
old way.
Paul, this is a...
that would be great.
Job protection.
What are you talking about? Back in the day, I could write a book and then coast for 3 years.
What about
it was
the
wonderful.
Excitement? What about the excitement?
The excitement. It's just never-ending aggravation. Like, even, like, there are small things. Like, they just, they're removing EPUB support from Edge.
Right.
Right?
We knew that, though. That's not a surprise, is it?
Yeah.
Actually, it is a surprise. We knew they were getting rid of the books. They got rid of the ebooks.
Oh, right.
Right?
You're right.
We knew
but
that.
The EPUB stuff, honestly.
Yeah, you're right.
Edge is a great PDF viewer.
It is.
It's a great EPUB viewer.
It should be an EPUB viewer. You're right.
But they are adding PDF support to Edge, to Credge, right? They've said that.
Yeah. But they're not they're not going to bring EPUB support. But they're retroactively removing it from the current version of Edge.
Mm.
So, you know. That's another thing I'm going to have to address in the book, this little kind of weird change that midstream that they did. Like in the past, you know, that feature would have just sat there.
Right, true.
And they would have moved forward to the next version. But now they just cull stuff out of there.
Hmm. You know what else they're removing? Flash.
Yep.
Ah.
Flash. Yep. Dun, 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 dun.
He'll save every one of us. So
it's going to bog down every one of us.
I didn't even know Flash still was in Edge. You know, it's not in most other browsers don't have Flash. You have to go out and install it.
I think it's in other browsers, but you might have to enable it, right?
No. Michael's school curricula uses Flash, and they said you have to use Edge or Firefox, but you have to go to Adobe and download Flash and install it for it to work in Firefox.
You almost have to go to the dark web now, right, to get Flash.
Yeah, get on the dark web. And I think Safari actively blocks it.
But you know what? Right. There are still websites, like some pretty big ones that require it, and sites, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like Comcast is one.
There you
go. My mom is on Comcast.
Xfinity player needs Flash, yep.
Yeah. there are a lot of like corporate training videos and corporate training assets that still use it.
Every 6 months, I have to be trained by the Premier Radio Network not to turn on the EANS emergency signal by accident. And
Do you have to pop in like a beta cassette tape to watch the
practically
instructional video?
Practically. And then they also have a policy. The IT department has a policy of resetting passwords every 6 months. Mm-hmm. So every 6 months, I log in. My password doesn't work. I have to call IT, get a new password, and then install Flash. So I can watch this ridiculous
slideshow.
Just so
you can watch it. Yeah.
It has the same music every time. Don't play the ENS tones.
Right. Also, by the way,
don't have a way to do it here. I can't. I'd have to get a recording.
I'm surprised they're holding out until the end of 2020. That seems like an incredibly long time.
It does. But this is Microsoft in a nutshell.
So the way they're going to do it. The way they're going to do it is Flash will be disabled. Then you as a user will have to re-enable it on a site-by-site basis if you need it. But then as of the end, they haven't given an exact date because they're following the Chromium calendar for this. But
yes, because Chrome's doing this too. Yeah.
Right. Towards the end of 2020, it will just not be an option. It'll be removed from the browser altogether.
Flash is not an option.
Yep.
That's going to be a good day.
It's going to be
They'll probably do A/B testing of this or something.
It's going to be a fiasco. It's just because sometimes you don't even know, like somebody else said to me this week, there's a game I play on Facebook all the time and it requires Flash. And I'm like, well,
it's
not going to work.
You have bigger problems we can handle on this show.
I know. It's going to happen though. Like we're going to get a lot of complaints and Leo will especially.
I'll hear from people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who knew that Flash was so beloved?
You know, the other thing that'll happen is the bad guys will come out in force with Flash installers.
Yep.
Fix Flash in your browser. Here's how.
Yep.
And that's what I'm going to really get calls from.
That'll happen. Yeah. Yep, for sure it will.
I called from the other day from a guy who said, I got a Facebook message from a friend who said, watch this video, but nothing played. So and then it said, click this link. And I keep clicking the link, but all it does is pop up a page that says, give me your password.
It just makes a cha-ching sound and another dollar comes out of my bank account. Stop clicking the link.
He said, I've been clicking the link over and over. I said, stop clicking the link.
Yep.
What are you?
That's awesome.
Isn't this a hint?
Oh, my God. My homepage is like home.ru now.
Yeah, what happened?
Oh, boy.
So what's all this about a CPU spike?
Yeah, what is all this?
So some people who are on 1903, you know, the May update, which we shouldn't call it that because that's not really an official name, who downloaded an optional cumulative update last week, started noticing they were having CPU spikes. And when they were reporting it to Microsoft, at first, Microsoft was saying, well, we don't know what you're talking about. No one knows what's going on. We haven't heard this. No, nothing's happening. Then yesterday on the Windows Update Twitter account, they said, we are currently investigating an issue where users are reporting high CPU usage linked to search.ui.exe after installing this update. So they know it and they're investigating it. All they will say is we will provide an update in an upcoming release. So they haven't given a time frame for a fix.
They haven't, by the way, at least they've acknowledged it. In the past, they've done a pretty lousy job of even acknowledging problems like this.
Yep.
So and I don't anybody, know.
Anybody listening to the show, make sure you follow Windows Update on Twitter because they have actually been doing a good job acknowledging these kinds of things.
It's important. And I think that Surface Pro 5 and 6 had just gotten some set of firmware updates.
They did.
It was not this. It was this had nothing to do with the CPU spike. Mm-mm. It might have had something to do with that battery life issue, right? Which was introduced
or the VB script. Wasn't there a VB script problem that also got
introduced?
There's
no VB script problems. VB script is the perfect language. That's what we should discuss next week.
Yeah. Yikes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So anyway, they if you are seeing this, and I've heard from a number of people who have said they are, they do know and they're investigating it at least. And that's all we can tell you.
Hmm. Yep.
Hmm.
Well, at least it's happening.
Yeah. It's happening.
Spikes happen.
Did they describe it as a hard computer science problem?
They did not.
So the spike is continuous or just happens once in a while? Or
it sounds like once in a while from people I've heard from. Mm-hmm.
That's weird.
They just want you to know what it's like to use the Surface Go.
What's the opposite of spike?
Exactly.
Plunge.
The trench.
Nadir. Let us take a break and then the back of the book, my friends.
Wait. What? Aren't you forgetting something?
Did I leave
something
out?
Took it out. I thought there was an Xbox segment.
Oh, I moved it into tips.
Oh, sweet.
Don't get your hopes up, Mary Jo. It's merely been moved.
Wait, where'd the Xbox segment go?
You were awfully excited about the Xbox thing.
Starting to look forward to it, Paul. It's your chance to get a cool one. Is it hot?
Is
it still hot or is it starting to cool?
Today it's back to horrible summer weather.
Although that should be the end of it, right? I think we're going to get rain and then it goes cool again.
Pretty soon. Yeah.
Let's hope.
Sometimes, though, you get these, what we used to
Indian summer.
We used to call Indian summer. Now we call First Nation summer or something. I don't know. Indigenous people summer.
Now we can just call it American Indian summer.
American Indian summer, yeah. Anyway, I hope you stay cool, and we will have a recommendation for a way to stay cool a little bit, if you like s'mores anyway. But first a word from Worldwide Technology. We love Worldwide Technology. I think a lot of you know Worldwide Technology because you're already customers. That's one of the things that's, you know, makes me happy about Worldwide Technology. Is people stay customers for life, years. And there's a good reason to, a lot of good reasons to, but one of them is the Advanced Technology Center, which WWT began constructing about 10 years ago. It has grown exponentially, like no other testing and research lab. There's now more than $500 million in equipment. $500 million, with a B, dollars of equipment in there. From hundreds of OEMs and key partners, you got, of course, the heavyweights. NetApp is in there, Cisco, VMware, and then emerging disruptors like Tanium and Equinix and Expanse. So here's what the engineers at WWT will use this to spin up tests, for instance, proofs of concept and pilots. And they'll use that WWT ATC sandbox so customers can see and compare and benchmark and confidently choose the right solution. That's great. Cut for customers. It reduces the concept time from months to weeks, gets your speed to market up there. But here's the best thing about this Advanced Technology Center. You can use it too. It's an incubator for IT innovation and offers on-demand and schedulable labs for you, like NetApp Cloud Volumes on Tap, ONTAP on Flash, NetApp Disaster Recovery as a Service, DRAS. That's just some. There's hundreds of labs representing the newest advances in every area of enterprise technology, from flash storage, multi-cloud, hyper-converged infrastructure, cloud data management. I mean, it does everything. And the lab as a service means you can use this lab space. It's a dedicated space within the ATC for customers. So you can perform programmatic testing using the incredible $500 million ecosystem that WWT's built. And because it's virtual, you don't have to go to St. Louis. You can take full advantage of ATC's unique benefits anywhere in the world, anytime, 24/7. WWT's engineers are in this lab every day. They're beta testing new equipment. They're building reference architectures, custom integrations to help you make decisions and see results faster with much less investment. We've been talking about this lab and the new lab as a service, this new digital platform. All summer, it's finally here. The ATC ecosystem has its new digital platform, which is amazing. It creates a multiplier effect of knowledge, speed, and agility anytime, anywhere around the world for their customers. You'll get access to all kinds of information, articles, case studies, even hands-on labs. All the tools that will make a difference in today's nonstop enterprise world. I just love it. To learn more about WWT, use the ATC and sign up for access in their new on-demand lab platform. Go to wwt.com/twit. Worldwide Technology simplifies the complex. That's WWT.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support. We thank you for supporting Windows Weekly by going to that address, WWT.com/twit. WWT, delivering business and technology outcomes all over the world, around the world. Thank you, WWT, for your support. Now, thanks to WWT, it's time for Paul Thurrott's Tip of the Week.
What is my Tip of the Week? Oh, yes. So it's September.
Thanks for really putting in the effort, Paul. We appreciate it.
It's September. So, which means we have new Games with Gold titles and Xbox Game Pass titles on both console and PC. The Game Pass stuff is not personally particularly compelling to me, other than Hitman, the complete first season might be kind of interesting. But this also, We Were Here, which is an Xbox One title, and then Earth Defense Force 2025 and Tekken Tag Tournament 2. But of more interest, perhaps, is Xbox Game Pass. So you may recall there are now three versions of Game Pass. There's the original version, which is for the console. There's the version for PC, and then there's Game Pass Ultimate, which is both of those things combined. So if you want to play games across both Xbox and PC, you can do that. And it's getting to the point now where it's getting a bit confusing. So Microsoft has decided to separate these announcements so that they're announcing what's on Game Pass for console separately than what's on Game Pass for PC, because obviously some titles are only on one or the other, whereas some are on both, which actually is its own kind of complexity when you think about it. Regardless, we usually hear about the first half of the month first, and that's what we have done. And so there's several titles appearing on both platforms, the biggest by far is Gears 5, which is the fifth major title in the Gears of War series. That is coming out, I want to say, is it Monday, Tuesday? When is it? It must be Tuesday. And I think if you pre-purchase, rather than get it through Game Pass, but if you pre-purchase it through like the retail ultimate version, I believe you can start playing it as soon as Friday. I will have a review, first impressions type thing later when I can. But I think it's fair to say that it's very similar to the previous title if you're into that kind of thing. So that's coming soon, and that's kind of a big deal. So we'll talk about that more next week. And then the app pick is Firefox 69, which is the version that they promised, I think I want to say back in June maybe, where at that time they added always-on enhanced tracking protection for new users. Now they're literally turning this on for everybody. So even if you're an existing user who has things configured, however you have them configured, enhanced tracking protection will be enabled by default. And I know there's more going on there. Let me just bring up this list so I don't miss anything important. But as far as Windows users are concerned, there is compatibility with Windows Hello for passwordless experiences. Remember, Microsoft introduced that in Windows 10 version 1903. So you'll need that version for that. And then some other improvements across Mac and other platforms as well. But obviously Firefox is free and it's available now.
My platform of choice.
Yeah. I was just thinking about this. I installed this the other day, and I remember you had said that. I think for me, my issue is I use several web apps as like apps, you know, and I use Chrome or the new Edge for that. And that's one thing Firefox doesn't do. They don't have a way to save it to the desktop or to the taskbar and then run it. It's kind of a Chrome-less window. I wish they did that, because I'd seriously consider Firefox for this reason, you know, for the enhanced tracking protection and just their whole stance on privacy.
They don't do that. Yeah, I'm telling you, the tracking protection, I turn it all on, and now that it's all done by
just
default,
go nuts.
Really,
you know, it's excellent.
Really great, yeah. Block fingerprinters, trackers.
Yep.
I block 30.
No, it's a good browser. I think about it. I have it. It's on my computers. I just don't. It's not my primary browser, but I certainly look at it, and it's all configured. And
I didn't realize it.
All my passwords and extensions.
It didn't support the PWA thing. That's a little disappointing.
Yeah, I don't. But you know what? This is worth discussing someday. This is kind of a workflow thing.
Yeah.
You know, I think like anyone else, like I think I get kind of stuck in my kind of the way I do things. And I think for a lot of people, you know, what I'm describing, they're like, what? Like, who cares? Like, you know, they can run tabs, whatever.
Yeah. But I like it. No, I think that's a good thing to have.
Yeah, it is a good browser.
Is it PWA or is it pinning that you miss?
It's pinning. No, it supports PWA. It's like all the underlying technology.
Oh, it does support PWA. Okay, so it's just
pinning. Yeah, what it doesn't support is the ability to run an arbitrary page or site or app as just a window.
Yeah.
In other words, it's the Firefox browser.
I never got that to work very well on Chrome, so I guess I don't miss it because it just didn't.
By the way, if I'm not mistaken, I actually think Firefox was the first browser to offer this functionality a long time ago.
Interesting.
And I don't know if it was Windows. It was probably Windows only, honestly, back in the day, but eventually, you know, Chrome came around and they did it. Microsoft has always done a real, you know, like everything else, kind of a half-assed job with it in IE and then later in Edge. But today, the new Edge and Chrome handle it, I would say, perfectly. It's wonderful. But I just don't know why Firefox doesn't do this. It's too bad.
There's probably an extension that'll do it if you really want.
Yeah, that's, yeah, maybe. Yeah, I'd like to. I'd like to try it.
Mary Jo Foley has our enterprise pick of the week.
Right. So it feels like it's far away, but it's not really. Microsoft Ignite, first week of November in Orlando. We will be there, of course.
Oh, exciting.
But today, Microsoft announced Ignite has sold out, which is interesting that it sold out finally. And they also have started posting Ignite sessions to the Ignite website. Right now, there's 466 sessions listed there. And unlike recent Microsoft conferences, there are a lot of sessions that have windows in the title or the description. There's 68 sessions right now that mention Windows. And if you remember, Microsoft, even at Build, was really downplaying Windows. Like when you do a session search for things mentioning Windows, you just get Microsoft 365. There are a lot of Microsoft 365 sessions. 273 mention Microsoft 365. Also a lot of developer sessions.
Sorry to interrupt, but what do you attribute to that? That's a big change.
Yeah, I think it's been complaints is my guess. Because people who come to Ignite are IT pros heavily, and they're dealing with Windows,
they're
right?
Still using Windows, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So they don't want to go to a show and be like, hey, I came to learn about Windows 10 and Windows Server 2016 or 2019, and I can't find any Windows sessions. Right?
Where's the Windows? No, I think
that's good.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. But what I also thought was really interesting about this list, there are quite a few developer sessions, and Ignite isn't always known as a developer conference. That's typically Build, right? But there's a lot of Visual Studio sessions and, of course, open source and even quite a few Linux-related sessions because of WSL and all. Oh, I know, sorry. But yeah, go if you're interested at all, whether you're going to Ignite or not going to Ignite, about what Microsoft might be announcing there. There's some hints that they're going to talk roadmaps and futures for Office and Windows at this show, which might make it very interesting.
Very interesting. By the way, in the Netherlands, your favorite country, they call Indian summer Old Wives Summer.
Also weird.
Yeah, the Netherlands has some, let's call it, politically correct, politically incorrect traditions that maybe we should just skip over for now. But
let's call it late summer. Yeah.
Late summer late is summer. Good.
According to Atlas Obscura, there's also a strong case to be made for Badger Summer, Pastrami Summer, or like Quince Summer.
Quince.
Yeah, because the quince come
in. Why not just call it like harvest summer?
Late harvest, yeah. It is harvest time in the Sonoma Valley and the Napa Valley. The wine grapes are being harvested.
It's harvest time here too, Leo.
Is it? What are they harvesting?
Corn is dry.
In the lower
corn and soybeans.
Corn and soybeans. Wow.
Corn and soybeans. It's everywhere.
And where do they send those soybeans now that their big market in China is gone?
We're going to be using it to dam the river when it overflows.
Going to be eating a lot of tofu this
Forget
year.
Sandbags. Yeah. We're using soybean bags.
Yeah, it's a soy bag.
We had a lot of people in town last week for VMware's VMworld conference, and I guess I gather there's a Microsoft connection there too.
There is. Mm. So at VMworld last week, there was a session that Microsoft held where they talked about how they are going to be working with VMware so that VMware Workstation will actually finally support Microsoft's hypervisor called Hyper-V.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So right now, that's not possible. If you're running VMware Workstation and Hyper-V is enabled, it just doesn't work. So this is a big deal. They didn't give an exact time frame for it, but the fact that the two are working together on this and they say it is happening is going to make a lot of VMware workstation customers very happy.
You know what else is going to make me happy? A beer that tastes like graham crackers and marshmallows.
Oh, man.
A beer that's named after Framingham, which makes this one of the better named beers you've ever selected.
It's both. Both. Yes. Two beers in one.
Yes. So Jack's Abbey, based in Framingham, Massachusetts, my hometown, they have a whole series of beers called Framinghammer, which are these really awesome name. Porters, Baltic porters, really big, nice, chewy beers. And I had one recently that was called their s'mores version. So because it's made in bourbon barrel aged beer, the barrel gives it this taste almost like a little bit of char. They put lactose in it. And vanilla gives it a marshmallow taste. And somehow they also make it taste like graham crackers. It really does taste like a s'more.
Oh, my God.
It's so good. I'm a marshmallow-crazed fanatic. I love marshmallows, and I love s'mores. So when I had a sip of this, I'm like, oh, bring it. Give me more.
They also have Framinghammers come in a variety of flavors. Bourbon barrel-aged, vanilla barrel-aged. I think that would be good.
Yeah. Is Framing Hammer the thing that Thor carries?
Framing Hammer.
Back when he was moonlighting as a framing guy. ladies and gentlemen, hard to believe, but here we have come to the end of this program. I will not be here next week, but we're gonna welcome the debut of Ant Pruitt filling in for me next week. He is a Windows guy. In fact, he got the Surface Studio. And he's loving that. And his day-to-day laptop, his work laptop, is an MSI, beautiful MSI gaming machine.
You know what's going to happen right before the show, Leo?
What?
Patch Tuesday.
So you...
Yes.
See, I thought Micah could do it again, but, you know, he's still a little weak on the Patch Tuesday concept. So
he has the ingredients now.
Yes, now that he has the beverage, maybe we should have some Patch Tuesday during the show next week. Mm-hmm. That would be kind of fun.
It's important that you do the egg white. Stephanie I cannot stress Carrot's that enough.
Patented Patch Tuesday beverage. I won't see you for a couple of weeks, but we do this show every Wednesday about 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That's 1700 UTC. You can watch or listen live at twit.tv/live. You can also download copies. That's a great thing to do because then you'll have it whenever you want to listen to it. And you can listen again and again. Some of these shows you just never want to stop listening to. That's at twit.tv/ww or YouTube. There's a Windows Weekly channel there. You can also subscribe. In fact, that's really the easiest way to do this in your favorite podcast application. It'll get delivered to you automatically. Paul Thurrott is at thurrott.com. That's his home on the internet. That's where he files daily. He also writes books every minute of the day. He's writing. Scribble, scribble, scribble. You can find those scribblings at leanpub.com, where the field guide to Windows 10 is currently in its 53rd edition, as Microsoft keeps screwing Paul. And Mary Jo Foley, you'll find her at allaboutmicrosoft.com. That's her home on the web. She writes regularly for ZDNet. And both of them are regulars here, which I like a lot. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, thank you so much for being here. And we will see you next week. Well, I won't, but everybody else will see you next week on Windows Weekly. Have a good day.